Hey guys, heads up for this episode. There's shaming of drug addicts, like, really terrible caricature, and there's, like, a general allusion to shaming sex workers, and there's also some pretty poorly thought-out racist-sounding name for mythological creatures that is actually going to become a cornerstone in the plot of the book. Oh boy, how fun is that? No, it's awful. But just be aware that those things are coming up. There's also an injection scene at the start of this. Alright, enjoy. Sin in Space, Chapter 5. A young girl's head was splitting with the agony of her infected superorbital sinus, but she was no whiner and even managed to smile. "I've got a present for you, Dorothy," he said. "It's from a girl who was your age a couple of centuries ago. Her name was Tracy. I don't know whether it was her last or first name, but she gave it to this stuff." He held up a hypo filled with golden fluid. "It's called Bacitracin. They found out that this Tracy's body fought off some infections, so they discovered how it did the trick and wrapped it up in this stuff, a good effective antibiotic." She hardly noticed the needle. "Misdirection is as useful to a doctor as it is to a stage magician," he thought wryly. A middle-aged man, who should have known better, was recovering nicely from his hernia operation. "I still say, Oscar, that you shouldn't have let me fix it up. You would have been a medical marvel, the man who got ruptured on Mars. I could have had you stuffed, got you a grand glass case right next to the door at some medical museum on Earth. Maybe a neon sign. You got a nice repair job, though I say it myself. But you're throwing away a worldwide medical fame. The man who tried to lift a lead shipping crate barehanded. I can see it now in all the textbooks. You sure you don't want me to undo you again?" "All right, Doc," grinned Oscar, red-faced. "You made your point. If I see anybody ever looking as though he's going to lift a gutbuster, I'll throw him down and sit on him until the crane arrives. Satisfy you?" A not-quite-young woman suffered from headaches, lower back pain, sleeplessness, and depression. Poker face, the doctor told her. "Mrs. Beals, you're the most difficult medical problem. A maladjusted person. I wouldn't be that direct if we were on Earth, but this is Sun Lake. We can't have you drinking our water and eating our food if you don't pay for it in work. What you want, whether or not you admit it to yourself, is to get off Mars. And I'm going to oblige you. If you knew what Joan Radcliffe is going through to stay... Never mind. No, I will not give you any sleeping pills. If you want to sleep, go out and work until you're too tired to do anything else." Was he right? He wondered. He knew the woman would never believe him and would hate him forever, but it was another kind of surgery that had to be done. Fortunately, not often. The woman would either change her attitude, thereby losing her ills and becoming the asset to the colony that her strapping frame and muscles should make her, or out she would go. It was brutal. It was profit and loss. It was utterly necessary. And so, to Nick Cantrella at last. Heaven had often been thanked in the colony for Nick's arrival. He was the born leader, the inspired and unorthodox electronics man, who hadn't garnered the sheaf of degrees needed for a halfway decent job on Earth cluttered with bargain-counter PhDs. In the colony, he'd signed up as a maintenance and setup man, but spent so much of his time troubleshooting that he was finally relieved of the routine part of his work. Just recently, he'd been promoted to chief of maintenance, purchasing and repairs of all lab equipment. His new dignity hadn't kept him out of trouble. He was home with a nasty chemical burn on his arm acquired far outside the line of duty. Tony didn't know whether he was glad or sorry Nick had missed the session with Bell and Brenner. Nick could think on his feet, but it was an even chance that Brenner's oily sympathy and Bell's open contempt of the colony would have goaded him into thinking with his fists. "Tony!" Nick yelled as he came in the door. "Gracie was here with the news. It's the biggest thing to ever hit Sun Lake. It'll be the making of us." "Let's see the arm, combustible," said Tony dryly. "Medicine first, politics later." Nick fumed as the doctor removed the dressing and examined the site of the burn. Now just a good scar, painless, non-disabling, and uncomplicated, due to quick poulticing and a heavy coat of Escher. Tony slapped Nick on the back. "Okay, Fearless," he said. "You can go back to work. Inhale chlorine. Drop pigs of osmium on your toes. Sit on a crate full of radiophosphorus and get a butt full of Geigers. Stir nitric acid with your forefinger. There's lots of things you haven't tried yet. Maybe you'll like 'em, who knows?" "So it splashed," Nick grinned, flexing his arm. "Damn good thing I wasn't there this morning. I would have thrown those bums out. Do you realize that this is the biggest break we've ever had? Why, man, we should just be praying for something just like this to happen. We never would have had to cut the Earth tie on our own and give up luxuries like Earthside medicine. I'm glad Bell's kicking us into it. All we have to do is to retool for oxen." His face glowed. "What a beautiful job that's going to be. Those boys in the lab can do anything. With my machinery, of course, he added. You can't do it, Nick. Tony shook his head ruefully. Ask any of the biochem boys. I went on the guided tour through the Kelsey plant in Louisville while I was thinking of joining a colony. It left me footsore and limping because that plant is 10 stories high and covers 4 city blocks. They operate more than 500 stages of concentration and refinement to roll those little pink pills out of protoculture, and the first couple of 100 stages have to be remote-controlled sterile. There isn't as much glass on all of Mars as the Kelsey people had just in their protoculture tanks. It's out, boy. Out. Hell, we'll rig up something. With all the crooks on Mars, we can make something they want and swap it for oxen across Bell's search cordon. Don't worry about it, Tony. This should have happened a long time ago. On our own. You're missing something. What if we do catch the Marcane thief and the Horde and turn them over to Bell? Nick was thunderstruck. You mean you think it wasn't a frame-up? One of our guys? We can't rule it out until we've looked. Yeah, it could happen. Well, if you'll kindly write out my medical discharge, I'll get a majority together and put it in the form of a motion that we hold a shakedown inspection of the colony. There's an easier way, maybe, Tony said. Anybody who toted that much Marcane got gouged up on the stuff, whether he knows it or not. It's micron dust. Fused ampules are about the only thing that hold it in without leakage, and this was in bulk. Also, the thief might be a regular Marcane addict, as well as wanting the stuff to sell. So? Nick grinned. We line everybody up and just see which one does this. He went into a comedy routine of ticks and twitches and strange yapping noises. You know that won't work, he wound up soberly. There isn't any way to smell out a Marky. Practically no way, Tony corrected him. That's why Brenner's a trillionaire, and that's why Marcane gives stiff competition to Earthside narcotics, in spite of the extra cost. The damn stuff doesn't affect you so people notice. You become an addict, you take your belt as often as you please, and you can live in your own private sweet dream world without anybody the wiser until, bluey, you drop dead from failure of the cardiac node to keep your heart pumping. You say practically no way, Nick reminded him. What's the catch? Have you got an angle? I get my electroencephalograph out and read up on the characteristic brainwave patterns of Marcane users. Then I run an EEG over everybody who could possibly have carried this stuff from Brenner to here. You want to line that up for me? Nick nodded glumly. Sure, he said. But you won't find any Markies here. It's a frame-up, I tell you. Hello, honey. What are you doing home at this hour of the day? What's all that junk for? Tony turned to see Marianne Contrella, Nick's blonde and beautiful wife, pushing her way through the door, her arms full of soft white cloth, scissors, heat sealer, and paper patterns. You'll be witness, won't you, Tony, when I testify that I only left home because he didn't want me here? Marianne turned large violet eyes from the doctor to her husband and back again. On second thought, she concluded, you're no better than he is. Could either of you big strong men stop gaping and give me a hand with this stuff? Nick jumped up and relieved her of some of her bundles. What's it all about? He fingered the fine cloth curiously. Baby shirts, nightgowns, and diapers, Marianne said composedly. Are you all through pawing it? Oh, for the Candro kid. But he didn't relinquish the material. Where'd the cloth come from? I think they just ran it off. Marianne took the heat sealer from him and plugged it into the house battery to warm up. She cleared a space on the table and laid out the patterns to study. I was hoping we'd get a look at Douglas Graham, she added. I think he's wonderful. Huh? Demanded Nick, starting. Oh, the this is man, my rival. He should be honored to be my rival. What's going on? Asked Tony. Is it a family joke? Douglas Graham's a national joke, said Nick. Now that he's going to gumph Mars, that makes him an interplanetary joke. Oh, the writer, Tony remembered. The rocket director had told him last trip that Graham would be aboard the next. He's wonderful, said Marianne. I just loved This Is Eurasia. All those dictators, and the charm of Tartary, and the history he made. It sounds so exciting, just like a story. This is Mars, said Nick sonorously. Chapter 1, page 1, the story of the Sun Lake Colony, or a milestone in the history of mankind. Do you think he really will write us up? Asked Marianne. I mean, if that silly Marcane business doesn't keep him away. No, pet. We'll be ignored, or maybe he'll take a few digs at us. His books run first as serials in the World Welfare, and World Welfare is an interest in co-op colonists. It is interested in PICCO number 3 over the hill. I'll bet you, by the way that the PICCO advertises, He'll probably play up all the industrial colonies as big smash hits for free enterprises, not mention things like the Pitco Red Lighthouse. Marion's lips tightened. I don't think it's decent, she said. Right, agreed Nick soberly. I'll tell Madame Rose tonight. Haven't been over for days. I'll tell her my wife doesn't understand me and doesn't think her girls are decent. Want to come along and make a night of it, Tony? Said Tony. If he was any judge, Marion's sense of humor didn't go that far. That's not what I meant, she cried indignantly. I meant it wasn't decent for him to hide things like that, and... Oh, you're joking. Well, I don't believe he would do it. I've read his books, and they're good. Have you got any of Graham's stuff around? Tony asked hastily. I don't think I ever read any. I shouldn't take time out, said Marion a little sulkily. But... She put down the sealer and shooed Tony off the trunk he'd been sitting on. A considerable quantity of wool socks and underwear turned up before she hit the right level. She handed over a conventional onion skin export edition. Tony read at random. The Cham's black eyes met mine with a gaze hypnotic in its intensity. The corners of his mouth drew up in a smile. The Cham spoke, and the front of his plum-colored silk robe embroidered with three-toed dragons in gold and silver thread rose and fell as he gestured for emphasis. These are the words of the man who rules over the 25 million souls that hold the lifeline between America's frontier on the Yangtze Kan River and her allies in the Middle East. Please convey to the people of your country my highest esteem and warmest assurances that the long peace between our nations shall never be broken without cause by me. The significance of this... Tony handed the book back. I don't think I've been missing much, he said. When you've read one, you've read 'em all, Nick agreed. All those Gunthers are the same. Marion was still digging through the trunk, fascinated at the forgotten things she was turning up. It was surprising how little used were most of the items that they'd found essential to include in their limited baggage when they left Earth. Here's something, she laughed. I used to read it back on Earth, and I thought it would be so useful here. She held out an onion-skin pamphlet titled in red, The Wonders of Mars, by Red Sand Jim Granata, Interplanetary Pioneer. I remember standing for the longest time with an extra lipstick in one hand and this in the other, and they both weighed exactly the same, and I decided... She broke out in another peal of laughter. I decided to be practical and take this. What I wouldn't give for that lipstick now! Nick took the book from her and rifled through the pages with a reminiscent smile. It's terrible, Tony, he said. Get these chapter headings. Mining for emeralds. Trapped in a sandstorm. Red Sand Jim should wish the air on Earth was as clear as the heart of a Martian sandstorm, besieged by brownies in the Rimrock Hills. What? Demanded the doctor incredulously. Besieged by brownies in the Rimrock Hills. If you don't believe me, look. The brownies, it says here, were a constant menace to intrepid interplanetary pioneers like Red Sand Jim, because they killed people and stole their babies and things like that. They don't often see one. Naturally. Naturally, doctor, naturally. But they were little people who didn't wear shoes or clothes, it says here. Which reminds me, he closed the book. I was out of the caves yesterday. Took a ride on one of the prospectors. We've never really looked into the caves, and I had nothing better to do while you were teaching me safety precautions, so I wandered around some and found kids' footprints in the entrance to one of them. They take the goats out there to graze sometimes, Tony said. That's not it. Looks like they've been going barefoot, and I don't think they ought to be allowed. They certainly shouldn't, Marion was indignant. Why, they could hurt themselves, and they shouldn't be allowed in those caves, either. They're not, Tony said grimly,